This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate. Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great, Josh, and I'm glad that Christian Eriksen, now a must-have in the UEFA Nations League game after his brace against Wales. The headline here on BBC Sports page says, Eriksen double condemns Wales to Nations League defeat. The drama is tense.
I saw France went top in the UEFA Nations League table today, too. So it's a big day. I still don't understand what it means. It's just like a glorified friendly still, right? It's all very confusing. Nevertheless, I'm sure within the next year or so, we're gonna do the full conversion. It'll be all UEFA Nations League fantasy from now on. No Premier League stuff. We're going to go all in once every 8 weeks or so. You're going to hear from us. It's going to be pretty exciting.
I haven't honestly watched a single minute of any of these matches. I've been a little checked out to the point where at some point over the break, I forgot that I was actually on my FPL wildcard. I was at a bar with some friends after you and I met for brunch on Saturday, Josh, and this guy strolls in to the bar with his laptop and he's watching the Spain England game. So I think he definitely has his eyes on some sort of automatic qualification for the next Euro Cup.
Yeah, I think that there is nothing less exciting than the first round of friendlies after the World Cup. Right. It's like we've just seen like the absolute like apex of international football. It's very exciting. It was a good World Cup, too, which helps. And suddenly it's like, we got four more years before like another, I guess, 2 years if you're really into Euros. But otherwise, it's like four more years. Like it's especially as a U.S. men's supporter, like. We don't even have a coach yet. Like, what was I? What am I watching for? Like, half the team could be different, you know?
So we've got notes here to preview ahead of game week 5. Notes on all 20 teams in the Premier League. I made some notes on some players who have been playing in the Nations League tournament. Mm-hmm. Also, excellent. Other friendlies around the world. So I guess we'll touch upon what some of our favorite players have been up to. We've not been entirely checked out.
No, definitely not. And I actually have watched a fair number of friendlies just because I'm in day 4 of 5 of a solo parenting trip. My wife's been away at a conference. And so it's been a very intense 5 days. She was also starting a new daycare. So okay. The upside of that was I was home for, you know, while she was napping, I was watching, the UEFA Nations Cup and, not really enjoying myself, you know, but nevertheless, I was plowing through.
Better than watching Boss Baby for the 500th time.
That's exactly right. So Brandon, as you mentioned a second ago, we're going to, we're at the 10% mark of the season. Thereabouts, I guess it's more like, 11%. We're 4/38 of the way through the season. We thought we would take stock and just talk about what one or two things that we now think we know about each of the 20 teams. I think it's too early to draw conclusions in some cases. I mean, I'm thinking of like Newcastle here, where they basically just had a run of terrible fixtures. And so I'm not sure we really can gauge them. But I think in a lot of cases, we have a lot of evidence to make some, you know, some decent, you know, just early assessments of these teams. We're also going to look at their next 4 weeks of fixtures. So we're going to look at this as a block. This is game weeks 5 through 8. After game week 8, there's the second international break. So it's a good time to sort of think about like the next few blocks of matches. It's good if you're on a wild card or if you're, you know, just, I don't know, just anytime you make a transfer, you should be thinking 3 or 4 weeks ahead anyway. So it's good to take stock. But you mentioned it, Brandon. How is the wild card going?
Yeah, it stalled out a little bit. I talked about this on last week's podcast, where I am without Salah at the moment, and I opted to bring in Mane to save a little bit of money, and that freed up my midfield. I'm dedicating the next week to getting Salah back in my team. The level of discomfort just keeps ratcheting up as I look at my wild card without Big Mo. So Mo's coming back, and there are really two decisions I have left to make on the wild card. Do I keep Ederson, or do I go to a 4-4-5 rotation with GKs? And do I sacrifice one of my premium fullbacks with Alonso, Robertson, and Mendy? So right. If I'm able to actually get up the guts to say goodbye to one of those three heavy hitters in the back, then that'll be my ticket to get Salah back. But I'm really just having a hard time justifying it. As we discussed originally with my wild card, these below 7 million fullbacks still present the greatest defensive threat so far in FPL.
Right.
So I'm struggling to figure out how to keep them and not get rid of them.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, I still haven't played my wild card. I'm hoping like some injuries will happen, you know, in a few weeks that'll make my decisions a little bit easier, because it does feel like there's about 15 players you really want right now in your squad, and 15 starters, I should say. Very, very hard to squeeze them all in. I mean, that's without even someone like Harry Kane, right? Who, it seems like virtually nobody seems to have in their team right now. Even though we all would kind of want him. We'll talk about him a little bit more in a second. This was the week of Salah out, right? This is the week when everybody decided at once on the back of one blank, basically, and some concerns about Champions League that I think are slightly overstated, that it was this is the time to get rid of Salah and move to Hazard. I'm not buying it.
I'll tell you this about my wild card. Speaking of Hazard, Hazard was one of the major points for me triggering the wild card. Well, Chelsea was. Alonso and Hazard. And I feel like feel free to talk me out of this, but I want a big offensive weapon. And Hazard is that. So it kind of feel I don't want to end up playing my wild card and not come out of it with another offensive weapon in my arsenal. And I see Hazard as that. And I'm going to be pretty bummed if I end up not having him just so I can make way for Salah. So that's I'm trying to keep Hazard in my plans and remember that he was one of the key reasons why I wanted to play my wild card going into game week 5, because I'm not sure Hazard is going to be worth having if you miss this early form that he's in.
I know. I mean, I wish I had Hazard too, even though I'm like, I feel like I'm like whatever the opposite of a rabbit's foot is. I feel like that's what I am I'm a two leaf clover or something with Hazard. Like every time I bring him in, like he just completely like just falls apart and blanks for 8 game weeks in a row or whatever. So I'm probably like, I have a little bit of a historical bias here. I get the appeal of Salah. I mean, he's cheaper. I get the appeal of Hazard. He's cheaper than Salah, but like what, like 2 million, right? They're around 2 million right now.
He's 10.7. So 10. That's 2.3 million. Yeah.
Right. So significantly cheaper. They don't play in the Champions League and the fixtures are great. I mean, those are all really compelling reasons. If I were on a wild card, I could see going for Hazard over Sadio Mane. But it's because I have Mane at the start of the season, you know, he just crossed the 10 million mark. I really don't see a reason to, you know, to drop money. Especially in the back of what he's done so far this season. And I guess, I mean, it just comes down to how worried you are about the Champions League fixtures. And I'm just not. I just feel like they're going to prioritize the league over the Champions League. And, you know, I mean, I guess we'll see. I mean, I think at worst, you're only missing like one fixture for them. It's the same risk you run with, you know, with the Man City midfield and forward line. So, you know, that's kind of where I come down on it.
Yeah. Well, I will make a point to post my final wildcard team to the Hail Cheaters Twitter feed at Hail Cheaters if you are curious to take a look. And for anyone who's a Patreon subscriber, I'll post some daily thoughts and updates on our Slack forum so people can follow along at home.
What a tease that is. Speaking of Slack and Patreon, patreon.com/alwayscheating is where you can support the podcast. We have two new producer level patrons this week, Brandon. Big thanks to Max Chamberlain and a big thanks to Brian T. Also, big thanks to our Mbakani level patrons who joined in the last week. Ole Christian Peterson, Sarah Karat. And Sarah, if I mispronounce your first name, let us know and I will read it the correct way on the next week's podcast. Emil Taylor and Jim Farner, thank you to all six of you.
And it's a good point to also say Jeremiah Johnson, who finished last season 221 overall rank. Amazing finish. Jeremiah is a Patreon member, and I've dubbed him our sheriff of the Always Cheating Slack forum. We actually did a special podcast with him just to celebrate his great finish from last season. And it was really fun to talk with him. We're experiencing some technical difficulties with the audio file with Jeremiah. However, we do have some of that chat with Jeremiah at the end of this podcast. And if you know Jeremiah, if you're in his mini leagues, be sure to stick around for the end of the episode where he does. He's not talking trash, Josh. Jeremiah is not one to talk trash.
No,
nice guy. But he does give a few shout outs to some of his pals. So Jeremiah is a great guy, great manager, and it was really fun to actually meet him and talk with him.
All right, Brandon, let's get right into the heart of the podcast. After this break, we're going to talk about 1 to 3 things we know about each of the Premier League clubs at the 10% mark of the season.
I look forward to this break, Josh.
All right, Brandon, we're back. A few things we've learned about all 20 clubs. Let's kick it off with Arsenal. I have a few notes here about Arsenal, Brandon. The first one is, it's possible you can't own anyone on this team, at least for the time being. Am I wrong? Is there a player you really desperately... Okay, their fixtures are great, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll jump ahead to the fixtures here. Just looking at the next four, Newcastle away, Everton at home, Watford at home, Fulham away. You would expect goals in that team, right? Or in that, you know, from that team, but where are they coming from? It's not totally clear to me.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Like somebody says, Josh, you would say to me, I hear Glasgow is great. And then I would say, yes, Josh, Glasgow is great. And I can tell you that it is because I've recently been there. Same with Arsenal. You say, I don't know if I can own anyone on Arsenal. Is that true? And I can say, yes, Josh, that is true, because I have owned many Arsenal players at the start of the season. Ozil, right. Mkhitaryan, just to name a few. Any Aubameyang owners out there would say the same thing. They they had two rocky fixtures to start with City and Chelsea, but then they had two pretty easy ones to just clear the decks and get ready for the new Emery regime. And we know even less about Arsenal than we did coming into the season. Ozil is a complete dead FPL asset right now. Aubameyang can't justify his 11 million price. So on and so forth. I do agree with you that I'm not sure you can really invest in Arsenal.
Yeah, it's like I see the potential for players in that team. Like there are players that I would like to invest in at some point. Like Bird Leno is down to 4.8 million. Mm-hmm. You do think at some point he's going to replace Peter Cech, right? I mean, it does seem like Cech can't really do this play out of the back style. There's already kind of rumblings, you know, in some of the national press publications this week that this change might be coming. I mean, it could just be total speculation, but I mean, how bad does Cech have to look before they finally kind of, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's like it feels cruel almost.
I guess, yeah, the issue, I think Cech is had a fairly decent start to the season just in terms of shot stopping. That's something that he hasn't lost. But yeah, of course, the big issue is Emery wants to play out of the back. He wants better footwork from his GK. And that is where Cech is really falling on his face. So
somebody mentioned, I think it may have been Arsblog, they were talking about how, you know, one thing that we're seeing a lot right now under Emery is he's giving the old guard enough rope to hang themselves, you know, so he gives Ozil, you know, a couple of games to see if Ozil can track back the way that he wants him to in his style. Ozil doesn't do it. And so he gets dropped. Right. I mean, I know they pretended he was sick or whatever, but pretty clearly just, you know, the rumor is pretty strong that he was just dropped from the squad and you know, they didn't want to say that.
Sure.
You know, Peter Cech, the same way. I mean, they're giving him a chance to play out of the back. He can't do it. So it's almost like it's, you know, it's kind of like with Conte that first year when he didn't do his three at the back until they lost 3-0 to Arsenal. And then he was like, okay, great. Now I can do my style. And they reeled off, what, like 10 wins in a row or something like that. So, I mean, you know, let's see with Arsenal. I mean, you know, Emery is a great manager, and he's done, I mean, he did, yeah, especially at Sevilla, he did amazing things. So I think we do have to give him some time. You know, Hector Bellerin is kind of the only player I really want in this team at this point.
Yeah.
Just dropped down to 5.4 million. Really attacking this year. The guy can't shoot, though. That's the one problem. He's got Kyle Walker disease.
Yeah, he does.
Until last week, I guess.
Yeah, Kyle Walker finally a miraculous cure for his disease with that shot. But yeah, these fixtures are still, despite everything I said, still pretty compelling. Away to Newcastle, home to Everton and Watford, and then Fulham at Craven Cottage, a match in which the cheaters will appear. We'll be live in person at the cottage for that match.
Lacazette, does Lacazette appeal to you at all?
I would love to have Lacazette if I knew that Emery was settling on a front three that was going to start week in, week out. That, like, if Lacazette was 7.5, I might be interested in taking that risk, but...
Yeah, he's like Man City midfielder price at that point. You're like, yeah, sure, like, that's the same price as Bernardo Silva, like, what the hell, you know?
Yeah, 9.5, you kind of want... I think the problem with Lacazette is at 9.5, you think, maybe I can scrape together another 1.5 to get up to Aubameyang and have the security of start, and presumably have the security of PKs that Aubameyang gets you. So Lacazette, I want it to work for him, because I'd love to have him for a decent run.
Yeah, he looked good. I mean, but, you know, the reality is he started one of four game weeks. You know, he played so well in the Cardiff match that you assume he might get a little run now. But, you know, even in these four easy fixtures, the expectation is what, that he'll start maybe three? I mean, probably not all four, right? And you know, he hasn't done a lot off the bench so far this season. So I think he picked up one assist in the first three games off the bench. So, you know, and Aubameyang is just too expensive, right, given his...
For sure.
Given how he's looked so far.
Okay, so if you're on your wild card, yes or no, Bellerin is in your side?
Probably not. I do have, I mean, I have a kind of unique situation because I have, if Luke Shaw is out long term, then this could be a situation that some of us are in, but I have Eric Bailly, who, you know, has lost his place in the squad. I just haven't started him the last couple game weeks. But, you know, I do my goal before game week five is to move by, assuming that Zaha is healthy. I'm going to move by onto somebody. He's priced at 5.4 million and I've got 0.5 in the bank. Mm-hmm. So I could move to Bayern really easily. I could also move to Patrick Van Aanholt, which just seems like more fun. You know,
he's a fun guy for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Laporte, I guess, is another option. But, you know, I guess there's some concerns about starting there, too. So Bellerin, I would rank him below Patrick Van Aanholt, though, in terms of who I want, you know, at that same price point.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's move on to Bournemouth. And the thing I know about Bournemouth is that they are tricky, tricky. I think I didn't have high hopes for Bournemouth at the start of the season, but I think they've impressed everyone with their attack. And their defense predictably has been pretty much a liability. Nathan Ake is kind of doing his Nathan Ake thing where he has been pretty decent on set pieces, but they just can't keep clean sheets.
Scored a scored a goal, didn't he?
Score a goal? Yeah. 5.0 to buy into this Bournemouth defense is, I struggle to justify 4.5 to get into the Bournemouth defense.
They could be 3.8 and I wouldn't want a Bournemouth defender. I mean, what are you getting from them? You're getting nothing.
Yeah.
They got a clean sheet in game week one against Cardiff. You know, I mean, anybody can get a clean sheet against Cardiff except Arsenal.
Yeah, it is strange. So it's really down to their attacking assets. So you've got three different people who are in the fold. You've got Josh King, who he was tough to own at the start of the season. I gave up on him, as a lot of other people did. Looks like he may be back on pens after Callum Wilson's adventure with penalties. And he's come out in the media and said, yes, I'm on pens. I'm taking pens.
Yep. So he's on pens and they have a great run of fixtures, right? Yeah. I mean, Leicester, Burnley, Crystal Palace, Watford, Southampton.
But the guy who stands out to me just on his price alone is Ryan Fraser, priced to sell at 5.8 and one goal and one assist on the season.
Oh, I like him. I wish I would have brought him over Conte. That was a big mistake. I don't know. I mean, it's so far he's actually Conte's outscored him by 1 point, I think. Yeah. I think in general, at his price, I think he's great value, and he's on like every set piece right now.
Yeah, he's 5.6 actually. I misspoke.
5.6, right?
Yeah, they're just a strange team, Bournemouth. I can't say I dislike them, but let's move on.
Okay, Brighton. Okay, a few things we know about Brighton. They have no clean sheets so far, but I don't think you can discount how tough their fixtures have been. They played Man United and Liverpool. They beat Man United, although they did concede a couple of goals. Away to Watford ended up being a tougher match than we expected, given Watford's strong start of the season. And even the home match to Fulham, just given that Fulham is so attacking, I don't think conceding a goal, and losing a clean sheet in that match is, that much of a concern. So Dunk was out, he's back in the squad, and I think he's a real option at 4.4 million. Mm-hmm. I am very tempted to have I don't know, this is like definitely not the smartest way to play, but given that the first match in our UK trip is that home match in game week 8 for Brighton.
Okay.
It is very tempting to have Dunk in my squad as a starter for that.
They're hosting.
It doesn't even matter what side of the pitch we're on, right? He might score a goal.
He very well might. Yeah. They're hosting West Ham there in game week 8. So you're counting on Arnautovic to not spoil the party there. I think what we should do is just go to Ladbrokes and take out some sort of cheeky bet about like a first yellow card or something like that. Now, I am going to try and talk you out of getting a Brighton player. I don't see it.
You know, I mean, to be so like personally invested in the game from a, yeah, we should just enjoy our time in Brighton, right, Brandon? We should walk the beaches.
Yeah, exactly. We should just forget about football entirely. But game
traded our tickets.
Game week 6 and 7, it's Spurs and Manchester City. I guess if you go the Brighton defender route, you've got to be prepared to bench these guys.
Of course. I mean, that's why they're 4. I don't think any Brighton player is a starter. I mean, the exception would have been Pascal Gross, but I think there's a real worry about him now, and a concern about whether he's still. I don't know. It feels like he's not really clicking with that. I don't know. It's strange. It's a strange thing with Gross. I mean, I don't totally understand it, and I know that now he's flagged with an ankle injury. But even before that, I mean, only playing, 10 minutes away to Liverpool was strange. I don't know. He's played 59 minutes twice in the first four game weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was withdrawn with an injury in the 59th minute or not in that Fulham game, but he did miss a pen. Just strange, at 6.9 million, which is where he's currently priced. He's just too expensive to have in your team.
Yeah. I do wonder what Brighton looks like when Izquierdo finally makes it back into the lineup. I guess he's meant to come back from this knee injury after the break here. So we'll see if he's straight back in or not, but he was such an exciting attacking player for them last season. And, I will give Knockaert credit. He's looked better this season than he did last season. I think he's contributing a little more with a little bit more discipline.
Yeah, just picked up an assist in game week 4. He's priced at 5.5 million, selected by 0.6% of teams. So if you are already thinking differential, which I don't think you should, but if you just want to be different, I think that Knockaert is definitely a player worth considering. I mean, it's not like he's like some underlying stat favorite or anything like that, but he's just he tries very hard, Brandon, as you've said before. He's yeah. a classic tryhard.
Yeah. So Izquierdo is now down to 5.9. He's dropped a little bit from people who brought him in for game week one, I assume. Okay. So keep right. just flag him, put him on your watch list when he's back and healthy.
It is Knockaert, isn't it, by the way? I think you're supposed to say like every letter of that name.
Josh, you want to talk about pronunciations? Why don't you go no. to a different podcast? That's not how we do things on Always Cheating. We say things incorrectly yeah. with pride and aplomb.
And we own it.
And That's we true. Own it.
Yeah. The final point here is just that we're probably all undervaluing Glenn Murray a little bit. I was a little worried because he was a little in and out of the squad at the end of last season. But at 6.5 million, it's a fair price. He's picked up three. He kind of just picked up where he left off last year, right? I mean, three goals in the first four games. Yeah. I don't love him for the next, as you mentioned before, their way to Southampton. They play Spurs and Man City in game week 6 and 7. But then they have a great run of fixtures starting in game week 8. They have, you know, West Ham, Newcastle, Wolves, Everton, Cardiff, Leicester, Huddersfield, Palace. I mean, basically from game weeks 8 to 15, you've just got like a really solid run of fixtures. So, I don't know. Maybe like there is time. Like they have this giant midfield now, right? Like all of these options, none of them are too expensive, except maybe Pascal Gross. So it'll be interesting to see if anybody kind of emerges from that. So definitely a team to keep an eye on.
Okay, so Glenn Murray, he's thriving at age 34. Burnley, however, they look like the 45-year-old men of the league. They are a shell of their former selves. The good news for Burnley, though, is that they are out of the Europa League, and they will have no more Thursday night fixtures, which, you know, for a team that doesn't have the type of squad depth that teams like Chelsea and Arsenal would have in the Europa League, Burnley is just going to plummet down the league table. So good news for them that they're out of the Europa fixture, but still, the question is Burnley going to finally sort of revert to the mean and become the underachieving Premier League side that everyone expects them to be? If I look at Burnley, particularly the first 4 weeks of the season, I'm like, where are the goals coming from? Two right. of their three goals this season have come from Tarkowski. Okay, so he's not playing striker. He's central defense. And Hendrick with the other goal. Barnes isn't really playing, but for 10 to 15 matches a game, I really can't see Ashley Barnes as a player that's going to replicate that goal streak that he had last season. And if right. Chris Wood is not scoring for Burnley, then I really do fear for their goal output.
To me, the biggest thing is Gudmundsson being injured. I mean, as long as Gudmundsson's out, that team is really crippled.
Yeah, so the prospect for Gudmundsson, I guess, is good in that it's not meant to be serious, his injury, and he was just going to sit out the international break. So it looks like he should be back, no problem. Let's see, what was his injury? A thigh injury. If you look through the, go to Ben Dinnery's site, premierinjuries.com, it is a host of thigh injuries. It's if last year was, like, say, the year of the twanged hamstring, this is the year of the thigh injury. I mean, Spurs' entire injury list is all due to thigh injuries. It's
Can it be the year of the fullback and the year of the thigh? Like, are those compatible?
I think so.
I don't know. All right. Well, I think we all kind of know where we are with Burnley right now. The thing is, they play Bournemouth and Huddersfield at home in two of their next four. So I guess that's their chance, right? Like, yeah. We'll see if they can write the ship.
And Cardiff away. I mean, even though it's an right. away match, Cardiff are the whipping boys. So you'd still like to see what Burnley would do there. So it's yeah. a big run of fixtures for them coming up.
Yeah, certainly from a fantasy perspective, you know, Tarkowski has proved his worth at 5 million, despite the fact that they've only kept one clean sheet. But he's got, you know, 20 points already through four. Good run of fixtures. Does a center back get better at scoring goals, or is it just like a bit of luck? I never totally know, you know, but still picking up two in the first four is something that you have to take notice of, right? Like if he
yeah.
has, you know, made a point to be more aggressive in the box or something like that, then he's, you know, really strong value at 5 million, given that they're always going to, you would expect them to be a little more defensively solid now that the Europa League is, you know, the run is over. Cardiff City, Brandon, One thing we know is that they are an awful team with awful fixtures. You could take a chance on their defenders. It feels harsh, but it's true, right? This is not a team that's longing for the Premier League.
You're just saying what everyone else is thinking.
By the way, we took a bunch of bold predictions for this episode. We're going to read them all off at the end of the podcast. So if you've chimed in with a bold prediction, wait till the end of the pod and yours will be there. You could take a chance on one of their defenders, Sol Bamba or Joe Bennett. But the fixtures really are bad in the near term. And they play Chelsea, Man City, and Spurs in three of the next four. And even that Burnley match is not going to be an easy match for them. That's in game week 7. I would stay away from this entire team. I see no value anywhere in that squad. and that's how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, this team, or the how the defense is priced is just another testament to the evilness of FPL towers. The one player I'm interested in is Sean Morrison. He's the team captain, just a legend on scoring goals off set pieces, central defender. But they priced him at 5 million. Like
priced him out.
Yeah. Going back to our earlier theory about buying into the Bournemouth defense at no greater than 3.8. If 3.8 is the threshold for Bournemouth defense for Cardiff, it's got to be around 3.2. And then you've got Sean Morrison in 5.0. So
yeah, maybe 3.2 just to be an enabler for other players, right? That's the
a great make weight at 3.2.
Yeah, I mean, and just to like lean in on Cardiff a little bit here, they're also like you remember, you know, when Middlesbrough, as we called them, were in the league a couple of years ago. That was a truly boring team to watch, right? There was no joy in watching them play. And I feel like Cardiff has really inherited that mantle.
Yeah.
Where there's nothing fun about watching Cardiff play. So, yeah, sorry. And if you're a Cardiff fan, I'm doubly sorry because it must have been fun to get promoted, but your team is no fun to watch.
Well, just remember, visit Malaysia. All right, so a team that's no good and no fun to a team that is good and is fun, it's Chelsea. So their fixtures were really quite nice to start the season here. They're turning ever so slightly as we go. They do host Cardiff, which should be a great FPL fixture. Then it's away to West Ham. Then they host Liverpool, Southampton, and then Manchester United. Alonso, let's just come out and say it. He's a must-have. He's returned offensively in every game week so far. 5 assists and 1 goal. It's incredible. And he's probably come like a post an inch away from scoring 8 to 10 goals already this season. So Alonso must have.
He could have scored at least twice in the Bournemouth match.
Yeah. And Hazard, we talked about when we were discussing my wild card at the start of the pod. I find him very exciting right now. And the excitement for Hazard is always just prelude to a grand disappointment. So everyone be forewarned. But 2 goals and 2 assists thus far. And it looks like he's really coming into form. Scored against Scotland this Friday and only played 56 minutes. So it's not like Belgium's
very
just
nice
going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's not going to be run into the ground ahead of this Cardiff match. So looking forward to rolling Hazard out in game week 5. Pedro, I mean,
just the whole problem is that he's going to be competing with Willian for that spot indefinitely, right? I mean, they're both kind of in that slot. So I just don't want to, if they were 4.5, 5 million, that'd be fine. But I just don't want to spend that much money for a player that, you know, every single week when the team sheets come out, I'm crossing my fingers up when they start. I hate that feeling.
Yeah.
And maybe that costs me money in the end, but like, that's how much I hate that feeling. I just won't have the player.
Well, I mean, I've heard you on this podcast make the opposite argument for Liverpool attackers and Man City attackers. Say you have to buckle down and grit your teeth through that rotation risk because, you know, even if these players come off the bench, they can still score. And Pedro is that type of player.
We're talking about Mo Salah and Sadio Mane, not Pedro and Willian. I mean, those guys have never had double digit goals in the Premier League before. You know, I mean, you know, I just don't see the appeal there. I don't know. I mean, do you disagree? I mean, are you thinking about Pedro and your team?
I am not thinking about Pedro. Well, I'll tell you why, because I think if you're on Chelsea, there are only two options for me. And I try to not be this inflexible, but I do think it's Alonso and Hazard or nobody else. Pedro is there, and I think he is the obvious option if you're looking to get in Chelsea at a cheaper price point. But I wouldn't recommend him because I think right now your mission is to find a way to first get Alonso into your team, and second, if you like it, get Hazard in there.
I did rush over to the Fantasy Premier League site to make sure that neither Pedro or Willian had scored double-digit goals, and I was right, just barely, because Pedro did score 9 a couple years ago, but I was still right.
I don't know. Pedro just has the type of technique where I can see – I mean, I don't know that he sustains it for an entire season, but I don't know.
Can I think tell you something, Brandon? Yeah. I inexplicably don't like Pedro. Like, I just don't like, I've never liked him. I didn't like him at Barcelona. I don't like him at Chelsea. I don't know if it's because I don't like his haircut or what, you know, I just don't like him. I
just
can't
get a bad vibe.
He seems like a bad guy. I don't know. He seems like a perfectly nice guy. I just don't like, it's like his game isn't exciting. It's not like I don't like. And I know nothing about him as a person, but it's just like his style of play or something. I don't know. I mean, do you like Pedro?
I honestly, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about Pedro.
That makes one of us.
I mean, thank God for FPL. Actually, it's bringing me to think about Pedro, whereas I would be otherwise living a life in which he never crossed my mind. So thank you, FPL.
True.
He's strange. Maybe it is that sort of like La Liga Premier League divide where I so closely associate Pedro with Barcelona and La Liga that he's always felt like an outsider at Chelsea. But he's been there for this is his third season there now.
Yeah, but I mean, even at Barcelona, this is like a total tangent now. But I mean, like, I feel like there were times when I liked every single player in Barcelona starting 11 except Pedro. You know, so it's not like, I don't know, just weird. The haircut.
We're verging into the territory of people who don't like The Last Jedi. So maybe we should just move on.
Crystal Palace. One thing we know is that they still can't do anything without Will Zaha. I like that. I think my computer autocorrected that to Will Friend Zaha, which I like in my running notes here.
He's a friend to all.
We don't know what the status is as of recording this podcast. We're recording this on Sunday night, so hopefully he's okay. His brother seems to think he'll be okay on Instagram or something. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I think he'll be okay. I feel like if it was a more serious injury, it would have like come out by now. You know, that's just my.
Okay, the last quote. Okay, what I love about this on Premier Injuries is the reason that Zaha is out. It's not knee, it's not thigh, it's not anything. It's a grouping of three different separate items: groin, hip, and pelvic. It's just like the whole it's the whole crotch and everything that comes into contact with the crotch.
Wow. Still so annoying the way that the Friday afternoon injury is the most annoying of all injuries.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. There's no way to plan against it or plan for it.
So it does seem like they may have some trouble scoring this year. The good news for them is that Christian Benteke won't be missing his chances for them for a little while. And I think that'll really help the offense. So it looks like this might be apparently picked up some sort of injury. I think it was with the Belgian squad. Sounds like he may be out for about a month or so. I think the hope is that this is Lord Sorloth's time. And I think the world is really crossing its fingers to see if Sorloth can finally deliver. There had been some talk about Ayew, but I feel like Sorloth is the preferred option of those two as a starting forward. Time will tell, I guess. But if he actually is a starter and if he does anything, I mean, he finally scored his first goal for them in a League Cup match a couple weeks ago. He's actually, for all of our like big upping him kind of in jest on the pod over the last like year or so, mm-hmm. or I guess whenever he joined the team, mm-hmm. He's actually not a bad option. I mean, I think his price is like, is he like, he's 5 million. Okay. So I guess his ownership never got high enough for him to fall down below five.
Oh, that's so sad. He is,
but he's available at 5 million. They play Huddersfield, Newcastle, Bournemouth, and Wolves in their next four.
Yeah.
If I were on my wild card, Brandon, I'm not saying you have to do this,
okay,
but you should do this. Uh-huh. I would not bring in Ings, and I would bring in Surlot, and that would be an extra 0.5 million that you could use for other places in your squad.
Okay, so Sir Mix, Surlot, I like big goals, and I cannot lie. I do agree. I think it is, and I love how we have morphed in this segment from our traditional Sorloth pronunciation to the correct Surlot pronunciation. So
he's earned that respect.
You can't say we never try. We do try.
Yeah. It just for anybody who's, you know, anyone who's like a relatively new listener, we got really, we coined the Lord Surlot thing because when it first started to break out, I think he was a January transfer last year. It was just all you saw for a while was the name Sorloth, just Sorloth, like popping up all over Twitter. And it is the most it sounds like a monster, right? It sounds like a sea monster.
It sure does.
You know, a Sorloth. Like that sounds like a thing that haunts like the Danes or something like throughout history. I think it was just, I mean, he's Norwegian, right? But I think it was just, there was a lot of excitement about a sea monster joining the Premier League. And then when we saw them and he looked like Ivan Drago, it was even more fun, you know? And so he looked sort of imperial, you know? And so I think that's where the Lord came in as well. So
absolutely.
That is the origin of the Lord Surlot nickname.
He is the only landed gentry of the Premier League.
That's right. All right. So yeah, Palace, but I mentioned their full Wan-Bissaka, both their fullbacks I like. I mean, Wan-Bissaka is, you know, the great cheap option. At some point his price is going to climb high enough that he's actually going to be less appealing as an option. But as it is, he's only at 4.1 million. Despite being owned by 22.9%, I guess that his ownership was high enough at the start of the season that he hasn't risen that much. Everyone kind of got out of the bed. This is why if we ever get to go to League Towers, Brandon, I'm going to petition them to not list selected by percentage until game week one kicks off.
Yeah.
Because I think these people, they come in the day before the season starts, they see who the highest owned players are, they bring them in, it shoots their ownership up.
Yeah.
We lose our competitive edge.
Yeah, we do.
All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you if anything else on Palace.
I thought Patrick Van Aanholt, I really like as an attacking defender. He's fairly affordable at 5.5 million, and their fixtures are pretty good. So I'd look at him.
Okay. All right. I got tasked with Everton here, and struggled to know what to say about them because I think they've been kind of vexing at the start of the season. I oscillate with my opinion on Marco Silva. Like I think he's an interesting manager. And then another day, I think he's a complete and utter snake oil salesman.
Yeah. It's like, is he like Alan Pardew?
Yeah. Yeah. Like what is this guy actually ever accomplished? And, the trick here with Everton is they have relied a lot on Richarlison for their goals. And we're missing two key players, Sanktosen and Gylfi Sigurdsson. Where are these guys in terms of FPL returns? So Richarlison is out for one more game week with his suspension. He needs off. He's basically the prime featured player on Brazil's social media channels right now. So while he's not getting Everton play, he's getting lots of play on Brazilian social.
Yeah, I was happy for him to get his first cap. That was. You know, he doesn't seem like – I don't think I've like ever seen him smile. You know, he's a little bit like Lukaku, but
serious.
Lukaku smiles sometimes. And like I posted a couple of days ago about how like Lukaku, no one is less happy in the world than Lukaku when he scores a goal.
Yeah.
I think that's really been like the last year or so. I think the first half of last season of Man United, when he was knocking him in like every game week, it was great. He was happy. And then he had that long drought. And now it's like he feels guilty about it. Like he still feels bad about this long run. And I feel like I haven't seen him smile since he scored a goal since game week 7 of last season.
Well, I told you how I was in the library and I went down this dark corridor and found this dusty old book and opened it up and found that Lukaku actually had a spell cast on him by this old wizard. And the wizard said, Lukaku, every time you score a goal, a kitten will be banished to a galactic prison planet. And that's why he looks sad every time he scores a goal, because a kitten goes to prison.
It's a heartbreaking story. And this is just one of the, in like the Brooklyn Public Library. It was just like a, was it like a,
it's, this legend was there for everyone to see, but I was really the only one that bothered to look.
You got the microfiche and you were like scrolling through.
So, Everton, Walcott has a rib injury. Doesn't sound terribly serious, but, I don't know. Rib injuries can really hamper your ability to breathe, particularly if you're sprinting as much as a guy like Theo Walcott is. So a little uncertainty there.
It's like a pain. Like, it's like he could be ready to play, but it's like whether he can play with the pain or not. I think there's a very good chance he comes off the bench in this game week, right? I mean, too risky, I think.
And their defense is also risky. It's a no-go zone. Aquino has got this major head injury that's probably going to keep him out through the end of September. And without him as the core of their central defense, I do worry about them being really leaky at the back. So on the whole, Everton are a dicey proposition, at least until Richarlison is back from suspension. We talked about a bit about this over the last couple of weeks with strategy. If you still are trying to figure out what to do with Richarlison and you still have him, easy to make the case to just keep him, ride him on your bench for the next week. So I think that we'd both recommend that you hang on to him just through the end of the suspension if you haven't dumped him already.
This run of fixtures for Everton is so good, by the way, that I shudder to think about how bad it's going to be in 5 or 6 weeks. It's the complete opposite of Newcastle, right? Where like Newcastle haven't had a good game yet. They're like an easy fixture, maybe the Cardiff away, but it's bad. It's going to stay bad for a while, and then it's going to be great. And it's like Everton must have some run coming up where it's like just all the tough teams back to back.
Yeah, I guess once you have to get to December when they have the Merseyside derby and then Man City and Spurs into the festive fixtures. So yeah, but until then, it's. It's not so bad.
Yeah, it's not that bad. What are they? How do they do that? It's crazy. Okay. Anyway, we'll have to have our lawyers look into that. That's very suspicious.
Please do. All right. Next up.
Fulham. Brandon, you are a Fulham supporter. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you one thing I know, and then if you want to add something else, please go ahead. The one thing I know, or I think I know anyway, is that it looks like they can score on just about anyone. Which is great because they aren't keeping any clean sheets. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think that's a fair and accurate representation. I mean, they finally got Alfie Mawson into the central defense, which I think might help shore things up, and they could finally push Lemacharn out to the fullback position, which is why he was brought in. So I think they're kind of fighting through these injuries that have plagued the defense for a while. And as we saw with their attack, they needed like 2.5 game weeks for that to actually start to come together. So,
right.
But yeah, as such as it is, Mitro is really the only way to go for me on Fulham.
Yeah. Well, Jean-Michel Seri, though, is interesting too, I think. I mean, he actually has outscored Shirley so far this season. 5.4 million, so it's a half million cheaper. Super highly rated player, almost moved to Barcelona a season ago. It was a big get for Fulham to bring him into their squad. I wasn't too bullish on him going into the season because historically he hasn't been maybe quite as attacking as he's been so far with Fulham. Could just be that the squad he was in, it was a fit thing or whatever. But I'm not like a seriologist, Brandon. I think he's at that price point, I think he's kind of tempting. The shame of it, the part of it is like, when you're on your wild card, you always want that best possible team, and they do play Man City in game week 5, and I wonder if that's taking some of the fun out of it for some people. But it's kind of a mixed bag of fixtures for Fulham.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Man City away fixture in game week 5 is a scary one for sure. Watford, Everton, Arsenal. I mean, just to touch upon Siri real quick while you were talking about him, I do feel like we're one FPL data point short of knowing if Siri really is the real deal. I'm getting Conte N'Golo Kanté vibes from him, where everyone's like, oh, is Kanté actually playing farther forward than we expected? Is he really an offensive threat? And I just wonder if it was just a flurry of attacking output from Surrey.
All right, Brandon, let's move on to our final. Let's do one more team and let's take a break. Huddersfield.
I have 2 points to discuss with Huddersfield. First, their upcoming fixtures, Palace at home, Leicester away, Spurs, Burnley, and then Liverpool. Two players to point out, Philip Billing is morphing into the 4.5 midfielder to have 90 minutes in all four game weeks this season and a goal. So if definitely a player that you don't want to waste a transfer to try and like work Billing into your side. But for all of us that are on our wild card or are soon to be on our wild card, I think Billing is going to stand out, particularly with that one goal under his belt. Then Jonas Lohsol, goalkeeper, it looks like he's got that position back, particularly after Hamer got that injury. And now I don't see how Lohsol would give that position up. So would you want to rotate with a Huddersfield goalkeeper? Certainly not. I think if you're considering a rotation with Lohsol, you're probably better just getting 4.0 to bench the entire time. Anyway, Huddersfield, they're kind of a bad team, so no sense really dwelling on this.
Fun fact about Billing, though, he is 6'6", much taller than I would have expected. It's a tall man.
That is a tall
man. He's only 20 years old. I wanted to see how old he was, and I just Googled the word Billing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I was thinking. Philip Billing was not even near the top of the results when you just Google Billing. They weren't quite smart enough to know that I was looking for a Huddersfield player there.
So. We just need him to score the game-winning goal so the headline can read, Top Billing.
That would be – Brennan, you missed a chance to be a headline writer. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with the second half of our team reviews.
Okay. All right, let's take a minute to talk about our friends at Starting 11. It's the newest way to play daily fantasy cash games live in the UK, US, Canada, and Germany for your iOS. There are also free games available everywhere on your Android device. If you want to download the Starting 11 app, just go to the Google Play Store or the iOS App Store. It's daily fantasy on your phone. Play any day in which there are two or more Premier League matches going on. Set your squad with no budgetary limitations. Adjust your lineup right up until kickoff. And once the games are going on, you have 3 live in-game substitutions that you can make depending on how substitutions are happening and action is actually unfolding live in the games that you're watching. And Starting 11 is starting to tease on their social media, Josh. Mini leagues are coming soon to the app, which is going to be awesome, right?
I expressed my excitement on Twitter, Brandon. I put it into words, my excitement.
Yeah, so
I really am. I think it's going to be an awesome feature.
So as it is now, if you want to play Starting 11, you can go into the app and challenge your friends. Just send a challenge to their email address that's tied to their Starting 11 account. You can play with strangers around the world, depending on what kind of cash game or free game you want to get involved in. But yeah, when these mini leagues launch, you'll be able to start leagues with friends and fellow cheaters out there. So go to starting11.io for more information. And if you want the full download from the horse's mouth, we talked to Thomas Braun, who's a co-founder of Starting 11. That interview with Thomas appears at the end of last week's episode, number 139 of Always Cheating.
Yeah, Brennan, just to tag along to what you were saying a moment ago, I just feel like, you know, these guys are doing everything right. I love the interface. I love how easy it is to deposit money. I feel like it's if you want to try out a one-day daily fantasy site and just see if it's for you, see if it's, you know, something you might enjoy. I just feel like it's a really good, fun, and trustworthy place to go. So starting11.io, as you said, great place to go and try it out. All right, Brandon, we're back. Leicester City. A couple things that we know. Well, maybe only one thing that I really feel like we know, which is that James Maddison does look like the real deal, right? He was a highly touted player going into the season. And even with all the kind of tumult that they've had, right? I mean, they didn't have Harry Maguire at the start of the season, and Jamie Vardy's been out for 3 games. It feels like this guy is like a little kind of mini Christian Eriksen, right? Like, feels like he's all over the ball. Seems kind of, you know, like pretty attack minded, really affordable, you know, around $6.5 billion.
Right at 6.5.
Yeah. I didn't know if he'd risen or fallen at all, but, yeah. So what do you think about Madison? Any thoughts in addition to what I said?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good comparison for Christian Eriksen, and to see, I mean, highly touted coming out of Norwich, but yeah, just to finally have real eye test of him in the Premier League and playing against these bigger teams, it does check out. And I don't think we've seen the best of him.
Yeah, I think one thing that we still don't quite know about, but the early signs are encouraging, it's Damari Gray and the Nacho Man, who both have looked pretty good. Now, granted, some of this is without Vardy in the team. But, you know, Gray is this player who has been intriguing for years, you know, and, you know, he's started all four matches so far. You know, he's picked up just the one goal so far. I think he may have done something in one of the League Cup matches too. And so, intriguing option. I think that, Nacho, how do you say his name?
Ian Nacho,
right?
Again, this is not why people are coming to the Always Cheating podcast.
I know.
I like to try.
Yeah, occasionally try. Yeah, we're not in the press box, you know. I don't know. Even at $6 million, which is a great price, I just think that we need to see him actually play together with Vardy for a while, assuming he even starts alongside Vardy. You know, and if he does, then he's interesting. But until then, I think that he's kind of a stay away. And, you know, and Gazal is the one who is interesting. You know, he did pick up the goal in the Liverpool match, but I just feel like it's way too early for him. I wouldn't recommend bringing him in quite yet.
My issue with Leicester is I really don't know where they're going to be at the end of the season. I think a lot of these teams, for better or worse, you can make these bold predictions of they'll fail, they'll succeed, they'll be mid-table, and Leicester, it's hard for me to put any real stock, and this includes James Maddison, and any of these players, because they just week to week have no idea who's going to turn up and how they're going to look.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they played away to Liverpool and away to Man United in two of their first four, you know, so it's just, I think that, and Vardy's been out for three of those games, you know, so yeah. It kind of feels like we just don't really know quite what to think yet, but I do like Maddison. I think we both like Maddison.
All right, so it's the two big daddies up next. I'll take Liverpool, then you've got Manchester City. So everyone's talking about this fixture pileup for Liverpool, mostly because they have two key matchups in the Champions League with PSG and with Napoli. So both pretty lauded teams in Europe. So the fixtures are as this: away to Spurs in game week 5, then it's PSG at home, home to Southampton, Chelsea in the League Cup, then it's Chelsea away for the league, then Napoli, followed by Manchester City. So there's some very diabolical fixtures for Liverpool there.
Right.
How does that make us now feel about one of our most beloved FPL teams with Salah, Mane, Firmino, Robertson, Virgil van Dijk, Alisson? These are all players that we have on our sides. You, Josh, are not intimidated in the slightest bit by these fixtures.
Well, I mean, okay, yeah, if I'm looking like 5 or 6 weeks ahead, I guess there's some pause. But, I mean, okay, they're going to play their strongest squad in the Spurs match, I would think. The PSG match is home. I mean, the Southampton game is the one that definitely gives everybody a little bit of pause. But the, you know, everyone keeps talking about this Chelsea League Cup match right before they play Chelsea away. They're not going to play anybody in that Chelsea League Cup match. That match might as well not exist, right? I mean, that's going to be all second stringers, yeah, because they've got to play a strong squad.
11 Jordan Chelsea. Hendersons.
Exactly. You know, the Napoli game, that is away, and that could be a tough fixture, but are they really not going to put out their strongest squad to play Man City at home in game week 8? You know, mm-hmm. or Chelsea away in game week 7. So, I mean, of those four fixtures, I just think that's going to be something close to the strongest squad for 3 out of 4 of them. Yeah, the Southampton one might, you know, might be a disappointment, but I don't know. I just can't build my whole strategy around one game where one of my players might not start. You know,
well, I think you're looking at it from only one direction, though, in terms of rotation. I think a lot of the concern is not rotation, but rather there's a lot of, they play a high intensity form of football, you know, Klopp's heavy metal football, so to speak.
Right.
where does exhaustion come in? Or just not exhaustion, but because they're professionals, they can maintain a certain level. But where does the form start to dip a little bit because of so many intense high-level matches?
I mean, it didn't really happen last year until the very end, right? So I don't know. I mean, if this were game week 34 through 8 and they were locked into a spot, I'd feel differently. But this is their year to win the league. And yeah, if I'm – and they made the Champions League final last year. Like, they've done that. You know, they brought in guys like Shaqiri, in my opinion, to play in games like the Champions League. I just don't know why he would prioritize that. Especially, they already have 2 points at Man City, right? Man City had this kind of surprising drop of 2 points away to Wolves. I mean, if I'm him, I'm putting everything into the league. So yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a little concern there. I'm more concerned about Robertson. I mean, that is definitely an area of concern because I think, you know, he can't play all of these matches, right? Mm-hmm. Given how much he runs. And so he's the one who is probably the most at risk of rotation, maybe of anybody in that squad. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Robertson would be a concern for me, not to like freak everybody out.
I don't know about that assertion, frankly, but
you think Alberto Moreno's playing in the Champions League matches?
Maybe. Well, listen, as I said, I think you're over focusing on rotation here and
and under focusing on exhaustion or something, or like just like fixture pile up.
And if you want to go back to something you said earlier about the focus for Liverpool perhaps being on the league. Yeah, Moreno or the Nathaniel Klein on the right side of the pitch, they're going to see some minutes, but they're probably not going to see minutes in key Premier League games.
Right.
So they're going to break up the rotation in the League Cup matches and other matches that are lower down the pecking order. So don't freak everyone out.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound like I would never drop Salah ever. You know, I know that I don't plan to drop Salah, but I mean, you know, the interesting thing right now, I mean, because I had Mane from the start of the season, I built up 0.5 million in value from him. It makes me really like less inclined to want to drop him. You know, Salah hasn't risen or fallen at all. You know, he's still 13 million. So there maybe I'm coming around to the idea of you could maybe make a move for Hazard. I won't be doing it, but I do understand the logic behind it. I guess I'm just willing to have a couple of matches where I just need to make sure I've got enough squad depth, really. I guess that's the biggest thing, is making sure I have players who are all going to start, you know, and make sure I really get my lineups right.
Yeah, well, so I think there's not a lot that we need necessarily to know about Liverpool. You don't really need to do anything with your assets. The one thing I would recommend, like, I was doubled up on Liverpool defense. I'm concerned about them continuing to keep clean sheets, given the fixture pileup. Yeah, it doesn't entirely frighten me in terms of Liverpool being a great team, but are they going to keep consistently clean sheets match after match after match? So if I would recommend anything, it would be just to step away from the Liverpool defense a bit.
Yep. Yeah. I think, I'd be doing the same if I had two and I was on my wild card. Man City, you know, I feel like we don't need to spend too long in Liverpool and Man City because we just talk about them so much on the podcast already. One thing we know, Benjamin Mendy is on the way to having one of the greatest seasons in FPL defender history. I think that's not too strong of an assertion if he keeps it up. I mean, he's just great. He's so fun to watch. He and Robertson, really. I mean, they're just like, they're so ridiculously attacking. And I mean, Mendy picked up another assist today in the France qualifier. He only played one of those two matches, by the way. So I don't think he's at too much of a risk for a rotation. Although who knows? I mean, it's definitely going to happen to all those Man City fullbacks at some point. The other thing about Man City is that you really can't trust anyone in their midfield right now. I'm intrigued by, you know, KDB just dropped to 9.7 million.
It's incredible.
It is. Yeah. So, I mean, at some point, you know, I mean, you got to give him a couple weeks when he's finally back. I think he's already kind of making some progress, right? I feel like I heard that he was maybe if not ahead of schedule,
he's walking again.
Yeah. If he's not ahead of schedule, he's definitely on schedule. So, I mean, I think we'll see him by December. Maybe he drops a little more, just given how high his ownership was. He keeps you'd think that everyone would have already got rid of him, but he keeps dropping. So,
yeah,
it must still keep happening. So, yeah, if KDB gets into like 9.5 million, that would be, you know, incredible value. But I mean, is there anyone in that midfield that you were even thinking about on your wild card?
No, I think it's Aguero and Ben Mendy, and those are the two focal points for me. Midfield is troubling. Sterling right. and David Silva would be the two I'd zero in on. Sterling, of course, right. the price is really tricky, particularly when we're talking about Sadio Mane and Hazard as much as we are. And right. David Silva, you know, he's always safer than everyone gives him credit for, right. and he's just like a great pivotal attacking player for them. So those are the two that I'd focus on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Sterling, I guess we were just talking about, a Salah out strategy. I mean, Salah out for Sterling would be a pretty nice move. It's almost like if I do a Salah out strategy, I don't want to put myself in a position where I bring in someone who's significantly cheaper than him, because I want to be able to bring him in quickly. And I know that if I drop down to like an 8.5, 8 million, if I brought in like Paul Pogba or something like that, I have free up like 5 million, I would not hold on to that. You know, I would spend it all throughout my team. And then when it came time to bring Salah back in, I would have to probably make like two or three moves to do it. And it would just, you know, if I didn't want to burn points, it could take me weeks to do it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Sterling is tempting, but again, is he, you know, I mean, he's going to be rotated too, right? I mean, over the Champions League. So it's, you know, you just be trading one rotation risk for another.
Yeah. Lyon and Hoffenheim are their Champions League opponents. Just,
oh my God. Okay. So maybe not. I don't know.
Hey, Moussa Dembélé is at Lyon now. So, you know, you never know.
All right, let's move on to Manchester United.
Manchester United, the fixture is Watford. Then they take on the Swiss team Young Boys in the Champions League, hosting Wolverhampton, then Derby County in the League Cup, West Ham, and then Valencia in the Champions League. And finally, in game week 8, it's Newcastle at home. So it looks like the big talking point coming out of the break for Manchester United is Romelu Lukaku, perhaps a differential premium striker. He scored against Scotland. He's looking to be in pretty decent form, whatever that means for Lukaku. So if Manchester United are going to be back and saving Jose's job and scoring goals again,
right?
Lukaku's an interesting option. The trouble is, as we were talking about on our wildcard episode last week, your FPL formation seems to be gearing more toward 3-5-2 or a 4-4-2, basically two strikers, and one of those strikers being Aguero. I don't see how Lukaku fits in, and I don't see how you can really justify bringing Lukaku in over somebody that's more explosive, like Aguero or even Aubameyang, even though we haven't seen anything from Aubameyang. I mean, how do you compare Lukaku to Aubameyang, given what we've seen in the first four game weeks?
I don't know. I don't want either one, really. You know, just Lukaku, man. He's just like he's. I don't know. I mean, I guess I just haven't gotten over the incredible period of not scoring goals that he had last season, and it just makes me not trust him still. The price is fine, 11 million, and their fixtures are very good. I mean, God, Wolves and Newcastle, you know, at home in two of the next four. Watford and West Ham, those aren't scary fixtures either. The problem is, you know, that I don't really trust the midfield. I mean, I guess it was encouraging if you like Man United, encouraging to see Lukaku and Sanchez start to link up in that Burnley match. It was kind of what we always thought would happen.
Yeah, I actually had a cab ride where the cab driver was a Manchester United fan. He had some paraphernalia up on his dashboard. I asked him how he felt about Alexis Sanchez, and he said, I really like Alexis Sanchez when he's passing the ball. When he's passing the ball to Lukaku. I think he was keying in on that, that goal they scored. And he's like, I do not like Alexis Sanchez when he's dribbling or trying to do anything else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's more of what we already know about Alexis and how he's really having trouble fitting in there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you asked me about Lukaku and Aubameyang a minute ago. The reality is I just don't really trust either one. And 11 million is a lot to spend on a player you don't trust, right? So
yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, Lingard getting a little bit of love with people over the break. No, he's going to have to do, I think, something, some FPL attacking returns
a wet,
before it even
enters. Windy night in Stoke, Brandon. Yeah. He's going to have to go down there, go down to the championship for 1 week, play yeah. Stoke, prove he can still do it. Yeah.
And the klaxon for Luke Shaw, he's had a head injury against Spain, came off in the second half. So gear up for reading into Jose's press conference coming up. Is it so bad that Shaw can't start over the weekend or not? You need to be aware of that. So more information to come on Luke Shaw.
Right. Especially, yeah, if it was a concussion, it could be out for a couple of weeks. So Newcastle, one thing we know. Honestly, not much, given how bad their fixtures have been. I think my feeling about Newcastle is that they seem to have a lot of fight in them, right? I mean, wouldn't you? I feel like I've been impressed with how they've played in a bunch of losing contests.
Yeah, I think so. I think they Benitez instills a certain amount of pride in them.
Right.
The upside for Newcastle is it looks like Matt Ritchie and Jonjo Shelvey are on course to maybe be back in game week 5, which I think they've sorely lacked in the midfield.
Yeah, it's a shame they didn't that Kennedy's pen was saved in game week 2, because that they really needed the 3 points in that game. And as it is, they've got 1 point, you know, from 4, and you know, they're about to play Arsenal away and Man United away, and even that Leicester at home in game week 7, I think that is not great. So I mean, and Crystal Palace away isn't a great fixture either. So it's, you know, we're still kind of waiting for them to have a decent run. I do like DeAndre Yedlin as a 4.5 million fullback. I just don't like him now. I like him as a game week, you know, 10 buy or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. Legendary meme over the break, DeAndre Yedlin playing against Brazil, asking the referee if referring to Neymar's dive, if the referee had watched the World Cup. It's like, hey, did you watch the World Cup? You know what this guy does?
He was actually pretty good in that match, too. He's probably the best U.S. player.
Yeah, still bags of potential for that guy. Southampton, fixtures coming up. It's home Brighton, away Liverpool, away Wolves, then home Chelsea, Bournemouth. Not great fixtures. So Ings, definitely a rotational striker. I can see some of these fixtures where I wouldn't mind benching him. And of course, Liverpool, he is not able to play because he's still technically on loan, and that's his parent club.
Right.
Another one that stands out is Cedric Suarez, who he was on a lot of people's radar heading into game week 1. Southampton didn't start so well. He dropped to 4.4. So Cedric still always like, I don't know, one or two good, decent touches away from attacking returns in every match.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think he is interesting bench fodder at 4.4 if you can survive this stretch of fixtures. And just a word of warning, I think if you are looking for takeaways for Southampton through the first 4 game weeks, Højlberg, he don't get sucked in. This guy has never assisted or scored a goal in the Premier League until against Crystal Palace and the dying embers of that game. So don't look at his record and get sucked in. Stay away.
Yeah, it's just as a point of reference, he's ended the season. He started at 4.5 all of the last 3 seasons. He ended 2 seasons ago at 4.2 and last season at 4.3. And I think that tells you just everything you need to know about his fantasy appeal.
It sure does.
Spurs, Brandon, one thing we know is that Kieran Trippier is quietly, at least in my opinion, quietly having an awesome FPL season. His ownership is about 25%, but I think it's a little higher than it is among the sort of FPL playing, like the more serious FPL managers, because he's English and, you know, that always skews your numbers up a little bit. But, you know, 11 points, 2 game weeks in a row, game weeks 2 and 3 is nothing to disregard. It looks like he's on some free kicks now. Probably will rotate a little bit because Sergio Aurier is a talented player, and you'd think, I mean, Pochettino always rotates his fullbacks. But I mean, have you thought about him at all in your wild card?
No, I haven't. I think that Spurs defense has been a little too dicey. I want at least the prospect of clean sheets if I'm going to be paying that much. And I do think at least Robertson and Alonso and Mendy give you that option. And if I'm sizing Trippier up against those more template fullbacks, he's not quite there for me yet. And there's this sort of butterfly effect with Trippier. I think I agree he's having a really great start to the season, but then it's impacting the way Eriksen is fitting in FPL-wise into the Spurs lineup, and he has fewer set-piece responsibilities, but somehow it's not freeing Eriksen up to do anything more attacking-wise. I'm a little perplexed with the Spurs attack and defense right now.
Yeah, the whole it's like Lucas Moura is the only player who's really, I guess, you know, Ali has had a pretty strong season, is a pretty strong start of the season as well. Although he's, I have game week four in my head right now. I thought he was pretty poor in game week four, and so it's kind of skewing my feelings about him a little bit.
Yeah, well, okay, so Harry Kane, you shared this on our Twitter feed, and we both listened to the most recent Stats Bomb podcast in which they talked about how Harry Kane has taken fewer shots this season than ever before. His attacking output looks to be in real danger.
Yeah, I don't really know what to think about him right now. I mean, it's, you know, he won the Golden Boot this summer. I know a lot of those are penalties. You know, he's got two goals and an assist already in the first four game weeks. I mean, you know, for any other player, you know, scoring in every other match. I mean, I know he had scored in every other match. He scored in, you know, game weeks two and three. Would be a great return, but you know, the bar is just so high for him, and his price is so high that you know, he gets a lot of extra scrutiny, and I guess you have to. And it was 12.5 million, but yeah, honestly, I'm just not really thinking about him at all right now, and he just doesn't look the same in the. It's a total eye test thing with him. I mean, actually, no, it's both. It's the eye test and the stats. I mean, because he's picked up a couple goals, maybe that actually makes him look better than he is, or makes him look like he's doing better than he is.
Yeah. I mean, this Liverpool fixture is going to tell us quite a bit about Spurs. Now, we're going to move on to Watford, but that, to see this typical Spurs, like, loss of metal or mental excellence against Watford, it's the same old story with them.
It's too bad their stadium isn't open yet. You know, I don't know how much of that's like affecting them or behind the scenes, if it affected buys they made this summer. Thank God for Lucas. I feel like he's really made a big difference for them.
Yeah. He's on the bubble for my wild card right now.
Two more squads, Brandon. Watford, fixtures, kind of a mixed bag, I guess. Great start to the season, though, obviously.
Yeah, they are at Old Trafford. Wait, no, they host Man United at the Vicarage in game week five. Then it's Fulham, Arsenal, Bournemouth, Wolverhampton. So, a bit of a mixed bag. I'm bullish on Watford, but I think that we'll know everything we need to know about Watford through game weeks eight or nine.
Right.
Little nervous about Halabas's clean sheet potential. He's in my wild card squad right now. I'm just sort of drawn in by
cheap he is.
And I grabbed that 4.8 price rise for him, and that was just kind of me feeling a little greedy, I think. Now I'm starting to think, do I need Halabas? I mean,
right?
Is he really going to keep up that level of attacking output? We had the same conversation about Alonso and say, well, hey, it's a good start for Alonso. Even if he doesn't, it's still like, it's a great foundation for a whole season.
Yeah. You don't have to start him every game week either.
No. Yeah. I definitely see Halabas as a rotator. So then you look at the attacking assets that have come to the fore in game weeks one through four, and it's Pereira and Troy Deeney. The one guy that is under the radar for me right now is Will Hughes at 5 million. Maybe he's a guy that could save. He's not one that you want to buy and think that he's going to really do it for you week in, week out. But he is the sort of player where he'll save your head-to-head or your overall rank one random week in which he gets a goal or an assist. So
yeah.
I do, at that price, if you're looking to plug a 5.0 hole with somebody who is going to be starting and can offer you something.
Yeah.
Will Hughes is definitely an interesting
option. Yeah. If you're playing like a 4-3-3, maybe as like a fourth, like bench midfielder, he's not a bad option. Mm-hmm. I think if I was playing that formation, I might like him in that spot. All right. Final team, Brandon, West Ham.
We have two more teams, Josh. Don't leave Wolverhampton out.
I forgot about Wolves. Oh, my God. Yeah, all right. West Ham. The one thing we know is that basically everyone is having a bad season almost across the board. As I was looking at some stats, I was actually just looking at, like, you know, just points, like who's scored goals and done well so far this season. There was basically no one. I mean, you have Arnautovic, who's been okay, not great, you know. The getting injured in the Arsenal match and getting subbed off early was a bummer, and it probably cost him some bonus points too. But even he doesn't seem quite at his best. This team has integrated a lot of new players. They've got a new manager. It is just kind of a mess right now, and the fixtures aren't really going to help them. They play away to Everton, which, you know, maybe I actually kind of like Arnie in that game just because Everton don't really have any center backs. Maybe Kurt Zuma. Is Yuri Mina going to be ready? Maybe if he's ready, that makes them a little bit better. Then they play Chelsea and Man United the two fixtures after that. Now, obviously, those aren't great fixtures. And they even playing away to Brighton at the Amex in the match that you and I are going to. That's not a great fixture either, right? I mean, Brighton are pretty strong at the Amex. So I kind of feel like just stay away from this entire West Ham team. I mean, I don't. Arnie is the one exception, but even him, I don't think I feel like you need, right? Given that Chelsea, Man United back to back.
Yeah, it just looks so bad for West Ham right now. I mean, Felipe Anderson is kind of exciting, but this is, yeah, it's still a team that is exciting on paper, but are just terrible in reality.
All right, final team, I think, unless I'm forgetting.
Yeah, this is the final team. Wolverhampton, upcoming fixtures, they host Burnley in game week 5. Then it's United, Southampton, Crystal Palace, and Watford. So decent. Wolverhampton, they are offering us the best goalkeeper asset right now in Rui Patricio. He's emerging as the favorite rotational, or maybe just if you're looking to set a 4.5 goalkeeper. And this does take a certain amount of faith or bravery, given that Wolverhampton haven't posted too many clean sheets yet this season. Right. Let's see. They just have one clean sheet thus far. So, but he's just looked that good. So I'm only looking at defense for Wolverhampton because the attack, they just haven't scored any goals. Jimenez, there's potential there, but still a punt.
He scored for Mexico in the international break, for what it's worth.
And it's worth a lot.
I'll add on to the Patricio thing. If you have not seen his performance away to West Ham, if you've only seen that he picked up, you know, three saves and a clean sheet or whatever, go and watch. Just watch the highlights of that match. He is unbelievable in that game. Absolutely single-handedly kept West Ham from scoring at least maybe two goals in that match. I watched that match and I feel like I was really I guess the other side of that coin is, if he had to make that many big saves, is that a sign that maybe he doesn't get the protection he needs to keep enough clean sheets to justify having your squad? But God, I mean, for saves alone, maybe he's worth having in your team.
Well, you think about that Arsenal-Manchester United game last season, in which De Gea had the ridiculous number of saves. I can't quite remember. And, you know, there are great keepers on great defensive teams that do end up having games like that. And it's not just a complete indictment of everyone in front of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll and I think, like, they have, like, you know, I think Johnny has looked pretty good too. He's only 4.4 million. Which is pretty cheap for a reliable starter, you know. So I might look at him as well. I mean, their fixtures are actually pretty good, right? I mean, Burnley and Southampton and two of the next three. So I just like this team too. They're just a fun team to watch and a fun team to root for. And I'm disappointed that my Diego Jota pick didn't work out, but I do like this team a lot. I think that, just, like, I mean, fantasy aside, I think that Jean Moutinho has looked awesome, right? It's really, really helped that team out and just gave them a lot of solidity through the middle.
No, for sure. All right, so we have some bold predictions coming up from our listeners alone. So let's take a quick break and we'll come back and hear some of those.
All right, Brandon, as promised, we have some bold predictions here. We're looking at these game weeks in a 4-week block. Game weeks, I wanted bold predictions for game weeks 5 through 8. We're going to the UK for game week 8. We'll come back. It'll be the international break. We'll be looking for content. So if you have a great prediction here and it turns out to be accurate, we will praise you on that podcast. If it is a bad prediction, we will make fun of you on that podcast. So get ready, Brendan. We're just going to run through all of these predictions. All right. Starting now.
All right. Eric Freeman says, bold prediction. All my wildcard plans will render themselves meaningless.
Morton Kine says, I predict Hazard as the next must-have and the most point scoring for the next four game weeks. When I say predict, I also mean pray to the almighty soccer god, a.k.a. Alan Shearer, that it will be so.
Vinyl Richie's bold prediction, Lukaku as the top scorer for premium strikers in game weeks 5 through 8.
Mike DiPietro, Patricio to finish the season as the top goalkeeper. Mike, we're going to have to follow up on that one in 34 weeks.
Dave says Salah will be outscored by Morrison, Conte, and Fraser.
Wow. Bold, Dave. Harry Haslam says, great, outperform Madison.
FPL Old Workshop prediction, Richarlison to not score again before Christmas.
Those are fighting words, Brandon. FPL Unicorn, Ozil to make a sprint in game week 8.
Okay. Siddhant Bhatia's bold prediction, Luke Shaw to outperform Marcus Alonso, like back-to-back double-digit points returns, kind of outperform. All right, so watch out for that head injury there, Siddhant.
Serwin Sajdowski says Lukaku to outscore Salah. You heard it here first.
Little Jason, the early flirtation of everyone with superstar wingbacks will wane.
Anawit, I want it. Allison to get an assist. Oh God, I hope that happens. We'll name our award this year after him if Allison actually gets the assist.
That Joe guy. Bold prediction, Kane to only score once in the next four game weeks.
Is that bold? That's like borderline bold. Joe, you're on notice. FPLTT says Mane to outperform Salah and the Holy Trinity, a.k.a. Robertson, Mendy, and Alonso, to be broken by Perea and Shaw. Yeah, we didn't talk about Perea in the Leicester section. Probably should have.
Bold prediction from Telmondo. It's my buddy Terry from Glasgow. Hey, hey, big man. Mane to beat this season Salah. Salah ownership to drop to 25% head explosion.
Bold. FPL bitter optimist Milivojevic and Gross to outperform Pedro, the player I hate, over the next three.
Dibendu, Mercury, Kane to grab two hat tricks against Huddersfield and Cardiff. Oh my.
Wow. Now, is that 12 goals or is that one hat trick in each of the matches?
Right.
FPL JK Lingard to become template again. Now I don't know, was Lingard ever template? That's my question for you, Brandon.
There was a brief while last season where he was, so yeah. I think that's fair.
Flirted with template.
Suman H. Noctar, his prediction, Salah to get a hat trick of hat tricks now as he's out of my squad. So a bit of fear there.
Yeah, a lot of it was triple hat tricks. Chirag Keswani, Jimenez to start his scoring run.
Absolutely. Everyone loves the Wolves. Let's see it happen. I'd like it. I'd like to get Jimenez in. And another bold prediction, Mark Perez, Diogo Jota to blow up in game week 5.
We'll see. Finally, Brandon, Baldy Weave has three predictions. One, Salah to get a bonus point. Never going to happen. Two, dunk to score at the right end. Never going to happen. And three, for Lukaku to gracefully control the ball. That one's just mean.
All right, so game week 5, Josh, what's the captain? Who's the captain going to be? I think that's what everyone wants to know, Salah or Aguero? Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, Man City at home to Fulham. You'd be crazy not to captain Aguero. That'd be the – I mean, we didn't – you know, I'm sure, you know, people will seriously consider the triple captain – and it'll be basically the same conversation that we had last week, right? Which is perfectly reasonable. I'm not going to do it. I'm sticking by that. Is there any chance that you triple captain Aguero at home to Fulham?
No way. No, not at all.
0% will never
maybe
happen.
Because we're gutless. Maybe because we don't have the courage.
Listen, I feel like that's how it keeps getting framed. Like, you don't have the guts to triple captain someone in a single game.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess so. I mean, you know, It's like, I feel like people cherry pick the times when a triple captain doesn't work out in a double game week. I mean, you know, two seasons ago, I got 75 points from triple captain and a player in a double game week. So it definitely works out a fair number of times.
Yeah. All right. Shall we sign off here, Josh?
Let's sign off, Brandon. You can become a patron, support the podcast, join our Slack, join our Knockout League, which we're launching after game week 8. We also have a Patreon supporters league, and we have t-shirts coming soon, Brandon. Go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to sign up.
Producer thank yous. It's thank you to Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Sam Streak, Jacob Roberts, Nick Costello, Carl's Rasmus, Lean Granley, Chris Howell, Rafi Khan, Martin Savage, Rick Brailsford, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Max Chamberlain, and Brian T. Don't forget to subscribe to Always Cheating. Find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Acast, TuneIn, Pocket Cast, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And if you'd be so kind, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It costs you nothing and it helps us a great deal. Josh, people can also find us on Twitter at Hail Cheaters. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/alwayscheating. Email us with your lengthy missives at hailcheaters@gmail.com. And for all this information and more, just go to our website, alwayscheating.com.
You got it. And yeah, just one final thank you to Max Chamberlain and Brian T, our newest producer level supporters, and Ole Christian Peterson, Sarah Carrot, Emil Taylor, and Jim Farner, our newest Empa County level patrons. Much appreciated, guys.
Great. All right. Good luck in game week 5, everybody. And good luck. You should set your European Nation League bus team right now. That's
just in case. Yeah. Be safe. Yeah. That's good call. All right, Brandon. I'll see you in a week.
All right. Poku forever.
Cheers. Bye.
Hey, Brandon here. As we mentioned at the top of this episode, we recently spoke with Jeremiah Johnson, a Patreon member who finished last season with a world rank of 221. Even more interesting, after game week 4 of that same season, he had an overall rank of 1.6 million. Jeremiah is a really thoughtful guy, and it was great talking to him about his journey from top 2 million to top 200, or close to anyway, and it gives us all hope for this season. Here's a little snippet of that chat, and we'll be posting a longer version at patreon.com/alwayscheating, where our Patreon members can access it. Thanks to Jeremiah, and hail cheaters.
So, how long have you been playing FPL for?
This is my 4th season. I had some old friends from college, Eric and Ryan, and they kind of talked me into it. And yeah, I think you first season.
You want to shout them out on this podcast?
Yeah, look at shout out.
He just did.
Shout out. I don't know to drop last names or not, man. But yeah,
sure.
Yeah, Eric Kowalker and Ryan Charnock. They kind of dragged me in the league. And first season, I was like at 500,000, and then second season, I was like 50K, and then the 221st. I didn't expect to, you know.
And this is a 500,000, 50K. That's how much you guys were betting on each year. That was the pool.
Yeah. It's a really big mini league. No, that's right.
So did they really smart when you finished 221? So I just mini leagues are funny things, right? Like Josh and I, we play in a cash league where we throw $50 in. I guess it was $65 this season. At the end of the season, though, everyone's forgotten about the money. It is strictly for the bragging rights or just for your own self-respect for some of the managers in our league. Do you guys did they think like, oh, why did we invite Jeremiah to the league? Or is there a big trophy that got handed off to you then?
Yeah, there's a trophy that gets dished out every year with their name engraved on it. They're pretty good sports about it. I think I was in first place for like 2/3 of the season. And at the end of it, they knew I was like so far gone. They're just kind of hoping for me to finish the highest as possible. But yeah, they totally take credit for my FPL success by inviting me in. Yeah.
I do want to talk about, you know, being a West Coast, because being an East Coast Premier League fan is pretty awful to begin with, right? There's like a lot of, I'm getting up at 7:30 every, I mean, I kind of am anyways because I've got a young kid, but, you know, I'm glued to the TV from 7:30 to like 10 every weekend, you know? And I, you know, honestly, yeah. I mean, getting up at 4:30, that's gotta be brutal. But anyway, I want to ask about that later. So, let's get right into last season though. So, as we mentioned a moment ago, 1.6 million after game week four. I mean, obviously, you know, at that point, you're not thinking, all right, I'm going to make a couple of small changes and then I'll finish in the top 250. Right. And
yeah.
So, I mean, did you feel like it was around that time when you made a change? Like, I mean, I don't know how, you know, what kind of recall you have from last season, but was there a moment where you're like, all right, I need to change my philosophy. I need to change my strategy.
Well, it was, I played my wild card, like I think in game week five or six, and I jumped up, not the following week, because your wild card never works the week after you use it. But,
that's a standard rule.
Yeah. But after that, I think I jumped up into the, like substantially, like almost a million spots. So, and then I was just on a good trajectory from there that I started getting down into the 100Ks for a while. And then I had another good game week. And then I think like game week 11 and 12, I was under 10,000 overall rank for the rest of the season, just kind of floated around there.
So when you play that first wild card, are you like, you know, there's like the big talk in, I mean, we're already seeing it. We're, you know, 4 weeks into the season, people are already talking about how, you know, they can't bring in Mane or whatever because they're trying to make up ground, you know, and they can't have the same player that someone else. Like, people are already thinking about differentials. It's like a word that I almost hate to use at this point because I think it's so overused. But like, were you thinking to yourself, I want a team that's different than other teams, or were you thinking, I just want the best players or the players that I think are undervalued? I don't know. Like, what was your, do you remember what your thinking was at the time?
I remember I had Mane and he got injured. Then I went to Salah. I like to have differentials, but not like too big, you know, like maybe like my fourth mid or, you know, have a third forward that, you know, plays, you know, every other game week or something. And he's kind of differential enough. You know, I just hit Sterling and Salah last year, and then I made some good transfers and choices, more so than bad ones, especially I had to cover Dunk's own goals last season.
Small feat.
No. So I think you just want to stay with the crowd and just minimize your differentials, I think is how I played it to start with. And then I think I try to think of chunks, you know, like – 5 or 6 game weeks at a time, and just not rage transfer. You know, no one's going to score every single game week. Just kind of wait it out.
I have a question for you, Jeremiah, about when you start to get up into that 10,000 area. I think about this with some of the managers who find themselves in this spot, and I think the guys who are vying for number one overall rank, particularly at the end of the season, basically their life just crumbles around them and it becomes completely focused on FPL. It just seems like a very stressful place to be because once you're up in that 10,000 echelon, the only place to go is really down. And it's such a long season. Was it scary to be in that position when you're getting the higher and higher ranks? And did you feel like the pressure started mounting, or were you having more fun than you ever were?
Yeah, so there was a lot of pressure, but I didn't really feel it or like get to me most times. I mean, yeah, like in the moment, you're like, crap, I got to maintain or else, you know, just having bang on average game weeks, I'm going to, you know, keep falling and falling and falling.
So how, like by the end of the season, how far ahead were you in your mini league? Was it like, was that a concern at all? Or were you like,
no,
already? pretty clear.
Yeah, I was pretty comfortably ahead. The last handful of game weeks. I think I was like.
I guess you were chasing the always cheating mini league, right? I mean, you were
yeah, I was.
I take my rank in those leagues pretty seriously. No,
that was one of my goals, was to break into the technically to the top 10 of the Super League, and I only did so the very last game week. So
because I think it helps to have somebody that you're. Yeah, Brandon mentioned my best season ever, and I. That year, I think it was only game week 37 that I actually got into first in that league. There was someone who was doing who was doing better than me and ended up finishing, I think around like 2,500 or something like that. And so that made it really easy for me. I didn't have as much pressure because I had pressure, but it was more like, I want to make sure that I'm covering his moves and that I have some differentials myself. I think that is like, I feel like if you're just chasing overall rank, like it's kind of hard to know what kind of team you want, cause how do you cover thousands of managers?
Let's use an elaborate metaphor of which I am fond. So you like to do road races and obstacle courses and that sort of thing, Jeremiah. It's like the same thing there, right? When you're racing, if you see somebody in front of you, it sort of compels you to keep pace with them. But if there's no one you can see in front of you, it's harder to control your pace.
Oh yeah. Or if you're behind, you just want to give up and like, screw this. No. So there are some guys, in different mini leagues that were next to me, that I would, I was tracking with for a few game weeks, and then they jumped up and I was like, dang, I could have been that high if I would have made some good moves. Like I brought in like Gomes from Watford last season for, 8 game weeks. That was a disaster. And so it's just
Watford will do that to you.
Yeah. We'll see if their balloon pops here in the next few games.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah.